Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
All right, welcome to a very exciting episode of Boots, Balls, and Bras. We are here in the Coventry Building Society Arena at the Arnold Clark Cup, literally sitting in the dugout. Anybody else feel like they're at Disneyland on a ride?
I'm used to sitting in this dugout, actually. 2012 Olympics.
Yeah.
Canada.
Feels comfortable, yeah. Feels comfortable sitting here.
And today we're going to be talking about international duty and the highs and lows that come with it. But we're going to shift our normal way of doing things today, because Eartha Pond is going to host this podcast and be asking Farah Williams, who you might know her. I don't know. She was England's most capped player, men or women. I used to captain New Zealand, for those that maybe didn't know. And so Eartha is going to ask us about our experiences today. So over to you, Earth.
Thank you very much, Bex. Really excited to be hosting. Obviously, guys, this is going to be the best one yet because I'm hosting. Really, it's amazing to be here at Arnold Clark Cup. I just really wanted to take a deep dive into your international careers and really give the listeners a bit of an insight. And I think what the first thing I'm going to touch on, because I saw it this week, is the Lionesses were all given a special cap in terms of when they made their debuts, and they were saying actually it reminded them of like their first game. It brought back all those memories. So I guess I want to kick it off with, how was your debut? How special was it? What can you remember? Did you get any chills? And yeah, just kick it off. Who should we go with? Bex, Vaz, anyone?
Go on, I'll go with mine. Might as well, because you looked at me and we went quiet for a while.
Yeah,
I hate that awkward silence. So mine was actually, so there was some confusion with mine, because everybody seems to think I scored on my international debut, which I did on my home debut, right? So basically, I was away with the under-19s. I'm going to tell you my whole story about getting the call up, because normally we just get a letter through the door, right?
You know, we only have like
I'm about to say that, Bex.
At this time, we didn't get a letter. So I was away with the England under-19s in a tournament in Denmark. And pretty much in landing back into the UK, we'd gone back to the hotel where the seniors had met up for camp. I'm waiting in the hotel for my lift home, and Hope comes through the corridor. She'd been away with us in Denmark for the tournament, and pretty much said to me, "Can I speak to you?" And I was like, "Yeah." Like, obviously panicked, because obviously when Hope wants to speak to you, you know, like it's not normally normally a good thing. So she pulled me aside and she said, like, "You had a really good tournament with the under-19s. We've got a few injuries with the seniors. How do you feel like staying?" I'm like, "You want me to stay with the seniors?" So obviously I was quite a cocky kid anyway. So I used to be really confident.
You were.
And all of a sudden I crumbled, and I'm like, let me think of every excuse I can. Well, Hope, I left all my wash stuff in Denmark. Hope, my underwear, you know, we didn't used to get it washed in camp. I've got no clean underwear. Can I go home and get some and come back? She was like, "Don't worry, we'll sort that out for you." Right. Oh. Let me tell you, they sent the liaison woman to M&S, right?
At least you're in M&S.
Yeah, she come back with granny knickers and presented them to me at the dinner table in front of everybody.
Fuming.
Now, let me tell you, I crumbled even more so than you could ever imagine.
That was my first moment with the senior.
I was like so embarrassed, like literally bright red. I was like, "Please, chair, just swallow me up. Like, take me somewhere. I don't want to be at this table."
Can I ask a random question?
And then I went to Portugal and played for 20 minutes.
What size knickers were there?
Mate, they must have been double XL. They probably fit me now. They definitely didn't then.
So you played first international
away
match in double XL granny and
something like that. Yeah, I mean, I think so. Or maybe none.
What a memory.
Yeah, so that was my call-up. And then obviously after that, your call-ups were pretty much through a letter form. So yeah, I had a special international debut call-up.
Amazing. A personal call-up. Yeah. What about you, Bex?
Mine was a little bit less personal. It was in 2003. And do you know what? I don't even remember how I heard. I think it was like a phone call or something from one of the coaches from New Zealand. And I'm pretty sure that my papa, my mom's dad, who was very, very interested in sports because my my mom's brother, my uncle, was an All Black. So obviously, like, coming from a rugby family.
Nice.
So he was like uber proud that I was captaining the Duke University team. And I'm pretty sure he made a phone call somewhere into New Zealand football just to like let them know that there was this player with an American accent, but who actually was a Kiwi. And my first game was in 2003. And it was against Samoa Islands in Australia, I believe it was. Now, don't quote me on that because I don't really remember, but they made me captain my first game.
Oh, wow.
So that was nuts. Mm. That was nuts. We went on tour and I remember him sitting me down like a couple days before the first game. And he was like, you know, you're coming from an international environment. It's the university system in the U.S. Duke was, we were pretty good at the time. And he's like, I think that you're sort of like more the way forward for this national team. And I remember thinking that is going to be really hard for those other players that have been on this team for so long. So I remember going and talking to the older players and saying, guys, what do you think? Because I'm not 100% sure about this. And they were so welcoming, so awesome about it that they were like, absolutely, go for it.
So just on that. So from your first game to your last game, you remained as captain of your national team.
Well, that's a good question, Eartha. And we should talk about that in the lows part because no, I had a bad knee injury in 2007. So I wasn't in the squad after my first World Cup in 2007. And then, let's keep that for the lows, shall we?
We'll definitely keep that for the lows. And what I want to know is obviously you get in, you make your mark, you've been selected obviously because they've seen you're working really well. How are you sort of received by your teammates? How are they welcoming? Are they excited about you being in the squad? What do you remember in terms of them kind of bringing you into the fold, Farahs, as part of the Lionesses?
You know what, I actually can't remember being brought in. I just remember being this really scared, intimidated kid sat behind Sammy Britton and Kelly Smith, right? And honest to God, so we're on the bus, and I remember going the first session. So bearing in mind, I knew nobody in the squad.
You didn't know anybody? Nah. Like you weren't friends with anyone?
No.
Were
no
you
one.
A lot younger?
17. Rachel Unit and Katie Chapman, but I didn't know them. I hadn't played with them at under 18 level. They had already gone up. But I remember, obviously, everybody knew Kelly Smith. And if you know Sammy Britton, dreadlocks, big. Like, I was like, they were like best pals, right? So they sat on the coach and I sat right behind them. They giggled the whole 40 minute journey to the training ground and I sat there paranoid to death, right, thinking they're laughing at me.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine? Like, I was like, oh my God, I don't want to be here. I don't know. No, I'm sure even there was no mobile phones either then, so I couldn't even like pretend I was on my phone.
Oh.
So it was horrible. And then obviously I got on the pitch, but you know what the funny thing is, I actually can't remember much of it. But when we had that recent Lioness gathering and everyone got back together, all the senior players that were there and I'd played with back in the day had told me that, like, I was a really confident, quite cocky, like, young kid that first broke into the squad. And I was like, I don't remember being that person. I remember being it a bit later on when I was, like, 19, 20 and a bit more established. But in those early times when I first got picked, honest to God, I don't remember being that person.
And do you know what's funny about that? Because sometimes you have this like perception of how you feel, and then other people see something different. And I guess when you go into the sort of international setup, do you feel maybe that you have to quieten down or just kind of settle in? Like, what? Or can you just be like yourself, your character that you normally have with your domestic, with your team? People know who you are. Can you transfer that characteristic of you being a player into the international fold?
No, I had a really hard time, Eartha, if I'm honest, because the Kiwis, you know, I grew up obviously part of my life, my childhood in Christchurch, where my cousins and everyone were, but I didn't go to school there full time. So I would go for like summer school and stuff. So the Kiwi culture is very different from the American culture, and especially the sports cultures, right? So in America, it's all about like, me, I'm the best, I'm like gonna be number one superstar. Everybody loves a superstar. In New Zealand, it's very much what we call tall poppy syndrome, which means that if you are a taller poppy, you get cut down. So people want you to be a team player, be humble, you know, be part of the team. And I think it's great. I love that. And I think a mix of both is good. But I found it really hard because, you know, coming from the US where we were like, come on, give me the ball, kick it harder. That pass was beep, you know. Yeah. And whereas the Kiwis were just, they didn't like the harsh language. They didn't want to be told that they weren't good enough. It was just, you know, it's a little bit, we had a guitar on tour. I told you, you know, it was like a little bit ding, kumbaya. Ding. Yeah. So I found that transition quite hard. And through the years, I think we sort of came to meet halfway, which, but still, you know, seeing them play today, I still think, and you know, I love the Football Ferns. I think they do a great job, but I still think that they need to toughen up. They need to get harder.
Definitely.
I definitely. Like that was my downfall in the early stages of my international career. So obviously, I broke onto the scene at 17, and I think my character played a part in me not playing as many games after that for a period of time. Mm. As I said, I was loud. I probably wasn't used to staying away from home. So that whole new environment of being away from home, around strangers, I was really a home person. Like, you know, as much as I could, I'd want to stay in my mum's bed or, you know, in a room with her and feel that, you know, feel safe. That's where I felt my safest. So when I went away, probably the first year and a half, it was tough because I knew I was good enough to play, and Hope knew that I was also good enough to play. But her way of integrating me into the team was by what I felt like at the time was punishment because of my character, which was loud and, you know, quite out there. And as I say, I was quite confident, quite cocky as a player. And it was to, you know, start me as a sub. So I went from like literally scoring on my home debut, sort of a turn leg against Portugal, to pretty much sitting on the bench for maybe a year and a half after that because of, I believe, my personality.
But do you know what I quite find quite funny about that is obviously like playing with you at Chelsea, like we know that you were like one of the standout players, and in your normal environment you would have been celebrated, people would have been like really proud about you going on at an international level. So everywhere apart from the international scene, like everyone was happy for you, like who you are, getting to celebrate. Then you go into this, I guess, this cultured environment where it's completely different. And that's a problem that I have in terms of how do you navigate that? How do you get young players to understand that there's going to be this transition? I don't think on an international level it's integrated as well to say that actually you need to be something different. And I think that's where sometimes we lose some of our most talented players, because they go into this environment, I guess, as leaders, as people who are leading that environment, they expect a certain thing. But if they don't understand the culture and that sort of intersectionality that others are coming from, they can't then integrate it, and they're the ones who are making the decision. So the ones who lose out often is the actual player. So were there any key things in terms of the environment that you sort of missed, enjoyed, like couldn't really catch on with?
Yeah, no, I think your point about culture in a team is so, so important. And like I said, you know, I think the thing I loved and the reason why I played for New Zealand, not the US, was one, I didn't really like the environment. I didn't like the culture in the US national team environments, in the ODP, we call it, the Olympic Development Programs. It was very political. It was very, you know, all about me, about showing off. There was no team vibe whatsoever. This was my experience. You know, everyone obviously has a different one. So I didn't like it. And I dropped out, even though I could have gone on and played. And then when I got called up to the New Zealand national team, the Football Ferns, or I call them the Football Fannies, it's fine. We had a guitar on tour. We were in like this big white van, and all of us were crammed into this van on my very first tour. Thank goodness I had another American with me, Simone Carmichael, who is like still to this day one of my best friends. And we were just looking at each other like, what is going on? There's a guitar in the back in a van touring around all of Texas playing against university teams. Like, totally different vibe, totally different experience than the US. And I liked it. It was more of a family. It was more, like I said, like a kumbaya. We got our guitar.
He was sold.
We had fun.
No seatbelts
on.
We had
fun. You know, to be really honest, like we went out, we would go play a game and then we'd go to the bar and we'd like go take some shots and then go to bed and like get up and go play again. And that was like way back before we really professionalized the national team.
I mean, back in 2020.
Yeah. lucky you.
Like a year ago.
I believe when it's certainly in the early stages of my international, you either changed to fit in the environment or you didn't stay in the environment.
And oh, is that why I didn't stay
in
the environment?
Yeah, that's why you end up, yeah, exactly. And I, you know what, I love football that much. And obviously the first experience of putting the Three Lions on, it was something that I wanted to continue to do. And so in order for me to stay there, I knew I had to change a part of me to stay within that environment. And I remember, like, you know, behavior. I used to get put with like the good people, you know. Yeah. I used to have to go to bed at 7 o'clock after dinner. I used to have to carry the balls, the boots, whatever everybody.
Wait, they told you when to go to bed?
No, but like the room, my roommate that I was with was really professional, and I was so unprofessional because I like to go to bed at 10 o'clock and not 8 o'clock. So you know how it is. But I had to change. I had to do things that suited the environment and allowed for my behaviors to change. And stay in an environment where I wanted to represent England.
Yeah.
So just on that, because I remember when I first went to my first England camp.
I remember well and truly what happened in that camp.
Do you know what thing? One thing that stood out to me was that when we finished training, like everyone used to go back, like have a shower, rush, and like call home and be on the phone for like ages and be like, oh, like mom, I miss you. And I used to be there, and people are like, oh, have you phoned home yet? I'm like, no. But I was like, my mum knows about football. Like, why am I going to be calling like every single moment to say I'm at football? Like, she knows where I am. So maybe that just different type of upbringing. I think maybe just lastly, you touched on that point in terms of you having to put strategy in place in order for you to keep that place and stay part of the Lionesses. Do you think, looking at the Lioness squad now, that Serena has a sort of different tactics in terms of players being their own characters and that allows them to be the best version of themselves? So I don't think, I don't know, but I'd assume that she'd want them to take responsibility for themselves and not really be that one that pairs you up and sit at the front of the class with the person who's, I guess, the goody-goody, whatever, but more about actually there are younger players in the squad, there are more experienced players in the squad, and how can we all sort of learn from each other?
Yeah, but I think, to be honest with you, Earth, I think that shift happened a lot earlier than Serena come in. So she's actually coming off the back of a culture that had changed massively.
Yeah.
And ownership and responsibility was then left on the players to take for themselves. So I was a part of that.
Was that with Mark Sampson?
Yeah, Mark. He started that culture. He got a group in. I can't remember the name of the group now, but he got a business in that basically help with teams, build team morale, etc. And it was really good. It allowed us to be open and honest and kind of accept difference. You know, all of us are from different backgrounds, cultures, whatever it might be, upbringings. And I think it was this group of people that come in allowed us as Lionesses to be vulnerable and understand each other more, which we didn't prior to that. So those prejudgments of coming in from other teams where you hate each other because you play for an opposition team and used to come to international camp and everybody probably didn't get on, you'd stay within your teams, your club teams, they allowed to break that ice and really get into the, you know, the nitty gritty of actually where people came from. And I think, you know, as I mentioned about the vulnerability, people, you know, we'd cry and we'd share stories that we probably never shared before, but it actually brought the group closer than it's ever been. And that's why I think 2015 was like a key year for the Lionesses in terms of progress and where off the field progress can really help on pitch and getting that bronze medal in the World Cup.
And can I say, from someone that played England a lot, we used to go to the Cyprus Cup and play you guys, the culture shift under Hope to Mark Sampson was like night and day, wasn't it? I mean, Hope was very regimented, like very strict, and Mark was a lot more about invite families into the camp and, you know, a lot more sort of, like you said, individualistic. Yeah. And it felt like a different vibe, like when playing against you guys, and then after, you know, the Cyprus Cup, we'd go to the, you know, and do some things after the tournament with you guys at times, and
it was hard though, Bex. You know, the hardest thing about that was it felt like we were being tested even though we wasn't. So when you got that ownership, so Mark was like, you know, you got downtime, you know, he'd do like a red, amber, green, and it was like, you know, the training days, the days where it's a bit of both, so a bit of work but plus, and then the green where your days is completely yours, out of kit and whatever, and you can go for a meal if that's what you want and choose what you want to do. But because we weren't used to being able to even leave the hotel room, it felt like you were tested. So those moments, it was like, is he testing me? Should I be going to eat a meal? Steak and chips, okay? So you kind of, it took a while for that transition and that ownership of like a responsibility of being a professional and doing the right thing on your days off. It took a while for that to happen. And I think Serena's actually now picked up at the group where people actually feel okay to do those things without being judged.
But is that, that's what I'm bringing it back to, isn't that the culture in terms of potentially Hope Powell might have been looking at it coming in as a black female in a position that is not, you don't usually see someone in that space, and for her leadership she most probably might have been thinking, this is what they expect from me, I need to act a certain way, I need to make sure that certain things are in place. And then maybe from Mark's point of view as a white male who maybe is more, I guess, welcomed in that environment statistically, or if we look at people that work in that space, he might think, actually no, this is just what we do. So more of a sort of education, understanding the culture, the expectation, because I guess maybe for Hope she wouldn't have seen anyone else other than what you, I guess, you see in normal sort of white leadership. So she's trying to I guess adopt those instead of rather just being yourself.
You know what?
I know where you're going at,
but I actually think the way Hope adopted and managed that national team was pure a case, I believe, looking back at it, the game wasn't professional. Mm-hmm. So how was she trying? She was trying to professionalize a game that was very amateur, mm-hmm. where people would do their own thing, eat what you want when you want to eat it. You know, we were overweight at times. Some of us, you know, we wasn't the fittest of squads. We had some technically fantastic players. And she was trying to get us to be professional in an amateur environment. And I think by doing that, she had to be very structured and disciplined with a lot of the work that she did. And maybe that's why she behaved and managed in that style.
But it's interesting though, because and you might be right. I think and where football was at that time, you might have had to have been that tough, because we also had John Herdman, who came in 2006, right before my first World Cup, and he was the coach of the under 20s at the time, and he was a lot more like Mark. He was very, you know, bring families in, very much a team vibe, but he was tough. Like, he was a taskmaster. He would make us, you know, watch all of these footage at night, and we had, you know, from start to finish, day to night, it was football. But he was also like very relaxed, and like the vibe was quite nice, except for me being the captain of the team. That's a whole other story. That was a tough role, I think, under him.
But I think just the one point is, she most probably felt that she maybe couldn't make that many mistakes.
Yeah, maybe,
because actually the lens is even more on her because of her ethnicity, because of her race, because of all these other narratives that build up to the England manager. And maybe because as a black person, you know that actually even if you perform exactly the same, you get
how you feel as a woman. You're
judged
business,
a lot differently. But we can't speak for everyone else. But that's been amazing. Should we wrap that up?
Should we
get on to our halftime?
Yeah. All right, so that was pretty much some of the highs, although I think we started getting into the lows. But a good halftime team talk, I think, would be talking about roommates, because this is something that maybe some people might know, but most women's teams have roommates, because on the men's game, they all have their own rooms. They, you know, have the budgets to be able to do that. In the women's game, we don't, and we still don't. So you often have, 99% of my career, we had a roommate. So let's get into some roommate stories.
Farrah.
Who was your best roommate?
I had two consistent roommates pretty much throughout my career. So I had Rachel Brown, was probably my longest serving roommate. Lucky her.
You say that as it was like
me.
A duty.
And I had
Jill Scott, so she was also somebody that I'd shared like the back end of my career for a long time.
That's why you dance like that. Exactly. I know now.
But they were like my longest roommates that I was with, and then you had a couple in between that. But Rachel Brown, for me at the time that I roomed with Rachel Brown, for all the off the field stuff that was going on in my personal life, she was absolutely amazing for me, and still is to this day. And you know, those that know, she was a teacher, etc. So she was like, she was probably the best listener, the best person at giving me advice. Mm-hmm. We'd talk for hours and, you know, into the night, like, you know, really like allowing me to get rid of all of this, whatever it might have been back then, anxiety, stress. Mm. You know, I didn't know, I was young, didn't really understand it. And we would just talk, and she would just literally make me feel so much better about some of my problems off the field. And an unbelievable roommate, but one of the messiest roommates. And you know my OCD, to the point where, you know what I used to do, and goalkeepers, so for those of you that don't know, goalkeepers would have to go to training earlier than the outfield players, which meant they go to breakfast early. So when Rachel Brown used to wake up and go to breakfast, I would also wake up and tidy the room, make her bed like the maid had been in.
Bless.
And she'd come back, oh, the maids have been early. No, Rachel, I've cleaned up your crap because I'm sick of seeing it. And then obviously Jill Scott, and so Rachel Brown was my first long one, and then I still call her Ruby now, and then Jill Scott. But Jill Scott was completely different. She probably wasn't in the room that much, out in everybody else's room. when she was in the room, she was a bad mess. Another one that was like, she was messier than Rachel, which is really hard to do. So for those of you that think Jill Scott is this tidy queen of the jungle, she's definitely not.
She was fine in the jungle.
But you know that what? You know what she would do? Yeah, she was brilliant in the jungle. And you know what? The jungle made me laugh so much. And I said it to her recently, is that every time she was going to be shown, I could already anticipate what she was going to do. I knew her that well. I'm like, she's going to do that. But she'd be one of those that we'd be talking, and Jill can sleep anywhere. That's why she didn't struggle in the jungle, because I promise you, we'd be talking and she'd be like, Farah, I'm tired. Boom. She's out for the count.
Does she snore?
Does she snore? She doesn't snore, but she's got a horrible breathing technique. I'm like, Jill, put that pillow over your head. And you know what she could? She'd put the pillow over her head and she'd be fast asleep. Aww. Honestly, unbelievable. But she was a really good tea maker. No wonder she owns a coffee shop because, yeah, she would make a nice brew. So I was lucky with that because I loved a cup of tea. But I used to make her baths. I mean, I nearly split up her and her ex-partner because I'd made her a bath one time in camp. And they were like, why is your roommate making you a bath?
She knows me. She knows my muscles are sore.
But yeah, I'm sure your roommates with the Qatar's Vex are probably better than mine.
Go on, tell
those
us.
Those sound good. No, those sound good. We had different roommates, so we like rolled. In the beginning we could choose our roommates, and then at the end they just sort of like put you with different people, and then they always asked me as the captain, do you want your own room? And I was like, no. It's way more fun. What am I gonna do there by myself? And I like going with the younger kids in the end of my career as well, because that was quite fun, because you always sort of like, you're like, what is going on with youth players nowadays? And the crap they used to tell me, I was like, this was never a problem. Like, social media came in, because we didn't have social media when we started our careers. My most interesting roommate is still one of my best friends, Simone Ferrara at the time. She's now Carmichael. And she just had a baby before we went to Papua New Guinea for a World Cup or an Olympic qualifiers. And it was in like 2007, I think it was. And so she was still pumping. So she literally flew from LA down to wherever it was, Australia, down to Papua New Guinea. For those of you guys who don't know, look it up where it is on the map. And it's an island in the middle of the South Pacific. And she literally had to, like, every, I don't know, a few hours, go to the room and put these things on her breasts and actually pump milk. And I remember, like, walking in one time and I was with another roommate, Abby Urseg, who still plays. I think she just got transferred from the Carolina Courage somewhere. But she used to be, you know, a top player for New Zealand and ended up stepping back from the national team. But she walked in with me and she was just like, what is happening? And turned around and walked straight out.
Oh, man.
Because Simone, you know, we were with a group of really young kids. She was one of the older ones. And then we had no clue, you know, back to the conversation we had with Rachel Yankee on the podcast about motherhood and all the things you had to go through. I mean, now when you see and you sort of understand more about what she would have had to have done, we're going to get hit by the sprinklers here, I think.
Close to do a podcast in a stadium, eh?
Sprinklers!
Whose silly idea was this?
In the middle of the benches. This is brilliant. Wonderful.
Oh, lovely.
You want some rain? Sorry, we just almost got hit by the sprinklers. But yeah, it was brilliant, because at the time you don't really understand how difficult it must have been for her, but the amount of that, the passion that she had, she wanted to represent New Zealand, and she left her like 4-month-old little baby Caitlin, who's now like 12 or 13. No, she's older than that. She's like 15, 16 now. You know, at home to be able to represent your country is pretty special.
You know what? Let me add, because I did have a roomie for 1 year, right? One tournament. It was the 2015 World Cup in Canada, and I had Lucy Bonds as my roommate, right? But Lucy was a lot younger. It was actually her first tournament where she was going to be a big player in that tournament, because she didn't
play.
That
was where she had her moment against Norway,
exactly.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
And but our little thing, like, and honestly, to this day, it just cracks me up. It will be like me filming her jumping out on a teammate, or her filming me. Our thing through the whole tournament.
Just scaring everyone.
How many people can we jump out on? And we go back to the room on our phone and just sit there laughing our head off at like how many people we scared in a day. So that was my most enjoyed. You know what?
Glad I never played for England, like, man.
As you mentioned there, sharing with a younger player. So like when I was with Brownie, I was the younger one for Brownie. And when I was with Jill, the older one a little bit. But with Lucy, she was a lot younger. So it was just like...
She took you back, to your youth.
Yeah, and I just... That tournament was probably the best for me. It was just like... I was just really relaxed through the tournament. No, played with no pressure.
You were good in that tournament.
Talking about herself and how, like, she was just coming into open-minded. You know what I mean? That helped me share with somebody
young. Wouldn't you say that was one of your best tournaments, Farah? You were so good in that tournament.
But for a different reason. Because I used to think that my game had to be... was assessed on me in possession, because I was somebody that liked to get on the ball and dictate play on the ball.
I know, you're constantly screaming at everyone to give you the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember.
And so for many years as an international, as a number four that sat in front of the back line, I used to think that I had to be the one leading the attacks from deep. And actually that tournament, I probably played a lot of the tournament without the ball. I learned how to play a second ball game, so the more physical game, picking up second balls. I learned how to get in good shape. I learned how to get up the pitch a bit more. So less without the ball, or needing to get on the ball to be effective. And yeah, I would say for that reason, understanding that I didn't have to be involved directly in play, it also gave me a greater impact within the tournament. Yeah,
I have another roommate story.
Go on.
May I?
Really
so,
quick.
So Maya Jackman is.
I said Maya Jammin.
I know.
Nothing against Maya Jama, but Maya Jackman is way more entertaining. And if you meet her, which you might in New Zealand, you guys are coming to New Zealand, right, for the World Cup?
Bex is getting us to New Zealand.
Yeah, we're going to be there. I'll introduce you to Maya Jackman, and then you guys can decide. I mean, Maya Jama is amazing. Whatever. Maya Jackman was—they used to call us the Twin Towers because we used to be the center backs, and we were both really tall. We both had blonde hair. We both had like Maori quads. You know, like I think she's half Maori, and so everyone used to like think of us as sort of twins, even though we look nothing alike.
Non-identical
and
twins.
And we play completely
different.
We
the cramp twins.
Anyway, she had the most amazing sounding farts.
Oh,
literally!
No way!
Non-stop.
You stayed in the same room.
Never.
Every single time, I would lose it because they were so funny. It was just
wait there. When you say lose it, as in laugh.
Laugh.
No,
I could not stop laughing at the sound.
Listen to this.
There's never ever going to be
my
Jackman.
Farting, that's the biggest thing of my hate. If that happened, a fight will be going on. I promise you.
Oh man, you would never be able to play for New Zealand.
I definitely would not be, because we will be fighting. There'll be
this
no shared rooms.
This is why Earth didn't become an international.
No, no, no.
She's not adaptable in that area.
Maya Jackman is world renowned
You're saying I'm not adaptable, but from all the conversations we've just had, being yourself and allowing you to be your character has seemed to be the best way to get the best out of players.
100.
So, if I need to be an international, be able to... No, but you can fart. It's not a problem. But you can go outside the room. You could do...
In the bathroom, innit?
No, because you have to open the door. No, none of that.
Okay, full time.
Full time.
Anyway, all right. I think that wraps up our halftime team talk about roommates.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's get into the second half, the lows of international football, because we know that it's been amazing watching the Lionesses. It's always been amazing for me watching the U.S. Women's National Team win everything nonstop. I mean, when you see them on TV, it just looks like a dream. And everyone always says that to me. Do you miss it? Do you miss it? Mm. And the one thing I always say is no, I don't miss it.
Do you know one thing that I really wanted to find out around, I guess, it might be a low, it might be a high.
You might need to ask someone else.
I might need to ask someone else. Just in terms of the dynamics of players, because obviously you come together as the best players in the country and there's loads of different players from different clubs. Are there any lows in terms of coming together and maybe your rivals, like 2 hours ago, you come together and now you've got to be all pals and have one goal? Like, were there any, like, bumps in the road, any secret bumps in the road in terms of...
So it's a little bit different, I think, for the New Zealand team, because I think for Faro, because you played against a lot of your teammates in your league, whereas I played in Sweden, Germany, Australia, so not a lot of my teammates from the Football Ferns actually were playing professionally when I first started, and then they went to Germany when I was there as well. But so I didn't really play against them very often, and when we did, it was just fun, because there was no... You know, the New Zealand national team, the depth of that squad was very small. You know, we had a starting 11 that pretty much was always going to be the starting 11. We had maybe 2, 3, 4 players that could get into that squad. So it was really sort of supporting each other, and it was a good vibe when we did see each other. But it's probably different for you, Farah.
What about you, Faz?
I mean, in the early stages, it was really difficult. I think that rivalry was definitely there. I think the fact that the international team had a budget. I remember when I was at Everton and we were playing Arsenal, and then we were due to go into camp. And it was probably at the time 6 or 7 Everton players, there was probably 6 or 7 or maybe 8 Arsenal players. We got on a minibus all together to camp.
Welcome. Can you imagine New Zealand,
after losing, after losing, it's like, and you're sat on this minibus and it's like, you can't even, you know what, I can't even explain, like, you just don't want to be there. You can imagine why, especially after you lose. If you win, completely different feeling, I would imagine, for the Arsenal girls sitting there, you know, whatever else, and we're at the front of the bus wanting them to shut up. But yeah, we used to, I think that was a difficulty when you played opposition, you used to get in the same car or minibus at one stage. But I think under Mark Sampson, I think that changed. As I said, I think that changed. I think the dynamics of people, I think what had happened when Mark came in, we were encouraged to communicate outside of the international environment as international players.
Did you have a WhatsApp group?
So no, we didn't have a WhatsApp group. It was just more a case of making that effort, that conscious effort to call somebody, check in, see how they are, as opposed to, it not, you know, don't force it. If you feel like you should do that, then, and I think it become a natural thing to do. So no, it weren't forced. We didn't have the WhatsApp group. Like, you know, Phil Neville brought a WhatsApp group into camp where he had a WhatsApp with,
got a text.
With every player. But yeah, I didn't get a text.
And I guess just on that, I guess coming in with like different players coming from different squads, when you went onto the bus, I know you said like, did at any point you like mix it, or was it literally like front and back?
No, front and back. On the bus, that was years ago. If I'm talking years ago now, yeah, I'm showing my age, probably 2008, something like that. So years and years ago we did it. So I can't really remember it, but it was. Arsenal would have been at the back of the bus, we'd have been at the front. And there was none of us mixing, integrating.
I think definitely in terms of like those sorts of friendship, like you're saying.
He used to take a day off, like in camp, like that evening, the next day to settle, yeah.
No, but in terms of like, obviously you said that Mark used to get you guys to have conversations like outside of camp. Mm-hmm. Are some of those people like now some of your like closest friends, or is there anyone who sticks out that's like, actually, I wouldn't have normally made an effort with that person because we've never played on the same team. We've never really had that chance to speak to each other. But actually through those.
Yeah, you know what? No, interesting you ask that, because you know what I'm like? I'm somebody that I have my friends. My friends are my friends. Like, I'm not somebody that makes new friends. I have acquaintances. You know what I mean? So I have my people that
follow
me. So
are we in or out? I'm not.
No, but I have people that I trust in, solely trust in from when I was young, Eartha being one.
Just sitting here on the same bench. No, it's all good. It's all good.
I'm just being honest. And so when this whole thing around, you know, you got to have coffee with people, you got to learn more about that person. For me, I was like, I was quite ignorant to it in the early stages. I was like, you know, this is fake. They're being fake. You know, they don't care about me and I don't really care about them. And we're going for a coffee and I wasn't that interested. The more you did it, the more natural it become, the more interested, the more empathy and all of these things started to come and without realizing they were there. Mm-hmm. And so, you're probably right. The people that you end up then having long-term or friendships with, or people that you speak to now outside of the game, that probably in the early stages of the game, I thought when I finish playing, I'll probably never talk to you again. I do talk to. So I certainly think it helped, develop that culture within the squad where like you end up meaning more to you after football. And obviously towards the end of your career, for me, because it becomes so late in my career, I certainly would have been completely, as I said to you, ignorant to it in the beginning. But I enjoy that I've now had these friendships with these players, having been put through the process that, you know, I originally thought was such a fake, you know, process to try and get everybody to become, you know, working mate, for example.
And I think that sort of extended support system is really, really important. And you touched on it earlier, Bex, in terms of when you lost your captaincy, and maybe these might have been people who you then might have had a conversation with or reached out to or still involved in the setup whilst you're out doing rehab. How were those sort of low moments in terms, well, let us know how it was.
It was hard because I think at the time, I mean, now we all talk about mental health and how injury affects that. But when I had my knee injury, I actually played through. I was misdiagnosed. I had a cartilage injury in my right knee before the World Cup. And it was misdiagnosed, and I just played right through it. And by the last game, what we played in China, I couldn't walk. It was like my knee was clicking, it was popping, it was like locking. And they were like, oh, you'll just go get an MRI back in Sweden when you get back. And I did that, and turned out I had to have a microfracture surgery, which is a huge surgery. I had to be on crutches for 6 weeks, like non-weight bearing, and sitting in bed for like literally 6 weeks. And back then it was like a much bigger deal. Mm-hmm. And so coming back, I worked really hard to get back.
You can
and
say
I
your tits off or your butt off. You can say that.
I was going to say my politically correct. My tits were already off. There's nothing really there to work off.
Your boots, balls, and bras off.
Boots, balls, and bras off. But I worked my butt off. I really did. I worked really hard in Sweden and tried to get back to the team. And I remember the first camp I got back, I was sitting with John Hermes. He said, I want to have a meeting with you. And mind you, like the whole time, no one reached out to me about like, you know, training programs. And they were just like, how is things, you know? And I was sort of keeping in touch with them. I got back into the first camp and he sat me down. And he said, listen, you're not the captain of this team anymore. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, clearly, because you guys have been playing games without me. Like, he said, yeah, we have another player here, Haley Morwood, and she's been doing an amazing job. And, you know, the team really likes her. And she's one of those players that people like, everyone likes her. She'd never say boo to anyone. She would never be like far and scream around at the pitch to everyone. Never. So everyone liked her. And she was a good player. She's a solid player. She's a midfield player. And he said, so it works for us. So if you're going to have a problem with it, then you're going to have a problem with this team and you're going to have to leave. And if you're fine with it, then you can stay. And I remember thinking,
whoa,
what is happening?
Wow.
Like, I don't really care. I never cared about the armband. That's not it. It's about like, and a leadership role is always one that I've taken quite naturally because I care. I genuinely care from like the first player to the last player. I want you to be included. Mm-hmm. I want you to feel like you're just as important as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the main thing that was like why I wanted the captaincy armband, because you can then lead and make, you know, create that culture. But didn't care. And it was hard because I didn't care about that. I wanted to play. I wanted to represent my country. And I remember coming back and we lost every single game in that Olympics in 2008 in Beijing badly. And between 2008 and 2011, because I was playing in Germany at the time, and the Women's World Cup, the next one, was in Germany in 2011. And I was playing well, you know, I was with Wolfsburg at the time. And, you know, I was brought in to sort of run the defense and, you know, be a co-captain of the team. And I was having a good time in Germany. And I remember John coming back to me a couple of years later, a year after, and he said, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
He's like, you should be the captain of this team, you know. And it's not because Haley's not a good captain. She is. Mm-hmm. She's a brilliant human being and an amazing player, and everybody loved her. He's like, but we needed you. We need you. And so he reinstated me as captain, which again, at that point, I didn't care because I was playing how I was playing. I was being the person that I wanted to be no matter what. And actually, I think in the end, it was really hard at the time, but I think in the end, it was probably one of the best things that happened to me, because it just brought you down and you're like, I'm not playing for that. Mm. And it made you really realize what I'm playing for. And after that, I enjoyed the time so much more.
I think like what you talk about there, just having that key integrity in terms of no matter who's watching, no matter what the situation, you're doing it because there are clear sort of values that you sort of stand by and that you want the whole team, the whole country, you want everyone to be included, you want everyone to feel like they're given the best opportunity to perform. I think that comes through really, really clearly. And I think for me, I remember when I played for Charlton, I got the captain's armband one time. We played Sunderland in a pre-season friendly. Jordan Nobbs, all those girls were still playing up there. I started doing shuttles. I thought I was literally, I've never closed down so quickly.
Energy, right?
Literally, I was like, literally, it kind of, for me, maybe it did do
that.
It motivated me. Mm. But actually, outside of that, I don't think I was really a captain. And I just really want to touch on you, Farah. I know you were captain for a bit for England, and then they took the armband off you.
Yeah, so it was in 2009. It was before was it the Euros? Because World Cup was 2011, right? So it was 2009 Euros.
Yeah. Euros.
And so in that 2 year build up until that, Faye White had been out injured. I'd been given the armband. We went on a really good run of games, you know, beating some of the top teams. I remember in that period, I think we even beat America during that period.
Jeez.
So that was a big. And I remember going to the tournament and obviously the squad numbers go out, you know, a couple of weeks before, and you start to read into the numbers, which we all did. If you had a, you know, a 1-11 in the England team, you knew that you were probably going to be one of the starters. Faye sat outside that. I think she was number 15 in that tournament. And at the time, Lindsay Johnson was number 6. So she thought she was going to start. And I remember the day before the first game. And it was the opening game. Our game was going to be against Italy. You go to the stadium that you're gonna play at, And normally the captain of the tournament will go and do the press conference. And I remember Hope calling me into a room before then calling Faye White into a room and basically sat me down and was like, you know, you've been a fantastic captain for this group, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think you need the armband in order to perform. Which at the time I was young and, you know, I was it was a huge honor to get the armband in Faye's absence. And I was like, yeah, I don't need the armband. Like, it doesn't mean that much. I'm not going to perform any different because I love playing for England. So it doesn't mean anything. And she's like, you know, Faye's been injured for her confidence. I feel like she needs the armband to perform. And it was only like, and then I went, so obviously that had happened. That was personal between me. And I remember going to the stadium and the Kelly Smith and Alex Scott, they were like, why aren't you in a press conference? I said, oh, Hope took the armband off me and said that she's going to make it clear that I'm the vice captain, which was never made clear before. We never had a clear vice captain. And that she thinks that Faye needs it, you know, and I don't need to wear the armband to perform. And I think it had a bigger impact on those for that session and the opening game, probably. They were like, you know, that's out of order and it's not the right thing to do. You've been a great captain. You know, and as you mentioned, I actually got on with like most of the team anyway. So it wasn't like that was an issue. And our cameramen are just getting wet right now. But so it wasn't that much of an issue. It was only later on in my career when I thought, how do you know the armband didn't give me an extra 5%, as you said there, because who knows? It does. Whether you subconsciously or whatever, it gives you something that you can't explain. There's something special about having an armband. Mm. And then obviously I wasn't captain for a period after that, but it come up again when Mark Sampson took the job. It was like an audition. We was in the Cyprus Cup and it was pretty much an audition, or it felt like an audition. So he named myself, Laura Bassett, Steph Houghton and Gemma Bonner as four captains that he wanted to play throughout that tournament. And I remember I was captain of the first game and the last game in that tournament when we got to the final. And it was at the end of the tournament, he pulled myself and Steph Houghton aside and was like, used to are the two that I'm narrowing it down to. I want you to go away from here and come back to me with reasons as to why you think you should be captain. And I'm like, and I was older now. So now I'm 30. It was really weird because now I'm 30. And so I was at the stage where, so when Hope gave me the armband, I was really young. And it was a huge honor. It was like, you know, am I ready for this kind of thing? And I probably wasn't. But now when Mark Sampson come in charge and give me the, I was up for having the armband. I thought, you know what? It's perfect timing. Mm. In my head, I thought, I don't have to tell you what, you know, I'm not doing an audition for this armband. If I'm good enough to be the captain, you think I'm the right person, you will make me captain. Mm. That's how I felt. Yeah. So I didn't want to audition and I didn't want to go back and call him and text him and send him messages about why I was the captain. And I'm not sure if Steph did that, but he ended up giving it her. And his excuse to me was really, really poor. And it was around, you know, being settled in a relationship and other things outside of football. And I thought, hang on, if you know international football, to be in a stable relationship, for example, is key. It's important. You don't want somebody that when you're away in camp makes it hard for you, because camping itself is difficult. But anyway, he didn't give it me. And I remember Matt Beard was fuming at the time. He was my Liverpool manager and was like, you know, I can't believe he hasn't like, you know, even spoken to you about it. And it was bullshit, absolute bullshit as to why he didn't give me the armband. But it didn't affect me because I actually felt that under Mark, I had, four. Really good years when he was in charge. So and I enjoyed my time playing under him. So it didn't affect me, but I'm not somebody that likes bullshit. And I like people that are quite straight talking. And I felt like on both occasions, that didn't happen to me.
Can I just ask one question? Because, and I think it's something that I've thought about.
Turn these off, guys.
Something that I've thought about for quite a while in terms of international sort of football. And obviously there's only a certain amount of places that everyone's vying for. Did you ever feel let down by a teammate, like someone who didn't kind of put your case forward in a situation, or maybe just remained quiet because it worked for them and they were getting selected? Did it ever feel like that in terms of, oh, why didn't you say anything then, or why wasn't you fighting my corner?
It's a great question, because I think, you know, team sports are hard. I sometimes I look back and I think, why didn't I just play golf or tennis or surfing? You know, I was a good surfer. I could have been a professional surfer. Like, that would have been way more fun, just going around beaches. But I played the team sports because I like the team environment. I like the social aspect of it. But it's hard because you do feel, and as a captain too, I always felt like I had a responsibility to the girls. And whether it's true or not, you feel like you have to stick up for people. You have to like be in the right place at the right time. And there were times during my career where 100% I felt like I've let down my teammates, but I also felt like I was letting down myself because I wasn't focusing on just me and my performance. And I don't know if you had that too, Farah, but There were times where I felt like I was being pulled in a thousand different directions. My coach was telling me, you have to be tough. You have to yell at them. If they're going to do that, they're slacking off. You need to be the one. And I'm just thinking, yeah, but if that's how they are, like, that, isn't that your job? Like, why is that my role as a teammate? So sometimes I feel like we take on too much. But then also I watch the girls, you know, out here in the last games in the Arnold Clark Cup, and I don't see a lot of communication on the pitch. Like when we used different, to play, right? It's totally different. When we used to play for the football friends, I was talking nonstop. The part of my fitness was doing hill sprints, talking, because I was sprinting and talking and screaming the entire match, because I also played the center back. So you could see everything and you could push up, pull back on your left shoulder, right back, you know. And yeah, I felt like there were times where I sort of let myself down, if I'm more honest about that.
No, I think on reflection of your career, I think when you're in it, as Bex mentioned there, it's a team sport, right? So you feel when you're a part of a team, you're supposed to be and support everybody within that. But it's also a very selfish sport. And you, when you're in it, you kind of only think about yourself most of the time, even though you don't think that you are. Mm. And I think everybody, you know, when you reflect on other people, you think they were selfish and I was selfish and they were selfish. And when you look back, there's certainly things that I would have done differently now, looking back on it, and supported people differently. And likewise, I would have hoped that people would have supported me differently. But it's easy to say now when you, as you say, when you reflect on things, in a moment is a moment when you need to, you know, action it. You know, we say, you know, we've got that saying, don't say it, basically.
Don't tell me, show me.
Which is, it was easier said than done at the time. And it's certainly international, I think more on the international stage, that was the hardest place to make those actions, I believe. For myself and for other people.
Yeah, and that's the thing about like being an elite athlete at the very top level, right? Because you have to focus on yourself. Because if you don't, there's no excuses. You can give all the excuses you want. You're not good enough, you're not playing. Yeah. So at the end of the day, it is all about you.
100%.
And that's one of the things that people, when people say, do you miss it? And I say, no, I don't.
But you know
because
what?
I was so focused on myself for so much of my life. Yeah. And even as a captain, and as I said, like constantly focusing on everyone else, trying to make sure, I was still so focused on me that I find it really refreshing now to be in a business or to have started my own business that is all about helping others, getting more investment into women's game because you want to grow for the good of the sport. It's totally different vibe.
Just on that quickly.
Just in terms of like the culture, like you're saying, you're so focused on yourself and you want to get the best out of what you're doing. But what happens when there's something that is just so blatantly wrong? Like, you know, it's not the right decision, but actually it still means that you still do what you do. Like in a culture now where there's a lot of people talking about things, social things that they're really like up, like they
like
want
me
to,
too.
Well, like me
that
too.
Whole movement, yeah.
But what happens when there's something that you know deep, you know that's the wrong decision in terms of like management or something, like, and you still don't speak up? For me, that's the thing where you like,
no, that's wrong. Yeah,
like, what happens?
I'm more of a thing of mine probably wasn't more on that. Mine's probably, you know, when things are going well for people, people don't care about anybody else, and when those things are happening to them, so the badder things are happening to them, they want everybody else to care about them.
Yeah.
And we all went through that process of when we were on top and when we were in it and everything was going well, we didn't care about anybody else. And when we were on the flip side and it wasn't going so well, we want everybody else to support us. And that's where I meant in terms of the selfishness of like, and we all went through that experience, because all of us throughout the international setup that I was in, there were times where people were consistently playing and there was times when we weren't. Mm. So all of us went through that process.
No,
what you're talking about are bigger issues.
No, I'm talking about exactly that same thing. That's an
opinion. And what I learned with the sport, in terms of a team sport, right? And that's why I really got into the coaching, is that, and that's why I found it easier when things went against me. So if I was a sub or I didn't play or I wasn't selected, I found it easier to accept, because I always knew what my strengths were as a player. I always knew what I was good at, and I knew that there were people in the team that weren't better than me at those things. But if the manager opinion of that is different, there is nothing within my control that I can change that. So if, for example, I felt like a player should be playing or should be in the squad, right, I can't change that. There's nothing I could do that can change it. I can air my opinion. Oh, I think she should be here. I think she should be starting. She's more, give more an impact. But it ain't going to change what happens.
I think it too depends on the management.
It can't change what happens.
I think for me, it depends on the management. So to answer your question, Eartha, too, like in the New Zealand team, like with John, we had a really close relationship in the sense that he was like, you're the one. So you have to tell me what's going on. You have to tell me what you think. And in that sense, he was really open. So he was hard. He was hard on me. He demanded a lot. But he also was like, I need that two-way communication. communication. So he was, and you don't find a lot of coaches that are like that, because when I was in Germany, it was not like that at all. I mean, they did not want to hear one thing from you. And if they did, it just meant that you got a strike against you and that's even less likely to play yourselves. And I think that's your point.
That's my whole point.
Depends on the culture. And I think nowadays, you know, there's so much more transparency in coaches and what's going on, because players have social media and they can talk and they talk to each other and they're quite open about what goes on behind closed doors. So I think coaches have to be a bit more careful
nowadays. I wish I was that player that would challenge managers and be like, why aren't I playing? I was never that player. When I wasn't selected, I was never that player that would challenge or expect a teammate to challenge on behalf of me for something I think that should have been. So because I wasn't that player for myself, I'm not going to be that player for somebody else.
Yeah.
That was just my personality. There was time. Do you think when Phil Neville dropped me from the England squad, my opinion of it, for me, I should have been in the squad still, right? Yeah. That's my opinion. I was playing the top of my game at Reading at the time. I was top goal scorer at Reading. I was in a few of the player of the months. I was in the end of the year, player of the year.
Team
of the year, whatever it's called. So I felt like I was having a good season. The season he didn't pick me again.
Yeah.
Now, my reasons as to why I think he didn't pick me as to the reasons that he gave me are two different things.
What did he give you?
And he also said that he publicly said in the media that we constantly had communication. We did not communicate one bit. From the telephone call that I got to say that he wanted to try younger players, so I then thought in my head, oh, it's an age thing, because I was getting older. Mm. We all come to an end in our career, right?
You're still only late 20s, though, right?
Yeah. Just say it to me. I'd rather you just say, look, you know, I want to go through that transition. Yeah. There's younger players that I want to play, and I don't feel your value. I felt I had still value in that team, whether it be on the pitch or on the bench. You know, I felt like I had
that. So why do you think he did drop you then?
My age.
But
my personality, I don't know.
And this is
my personality, because I was challenging. And I was in an environment where I'd been in for 19 years, let's not forget. So I knew the environment. I knew international football. He was new to the women's game.
Yeah.
I'm going to challenge
him. Do you think he was threatened by you?
You can only ask him that. I can't answer that. Mm. I don't know. I don't know what the problem was. He will say that it wasn't an age thing. He will say that, you know, I was better than what I was. There was times he didn't pick me for camps and would pick other players. And he said he had too much respect then to bring me into camps at times. It's not respect. I want to be an international footballer. Can I pick me? But there you are.
No, but just on that, in terms of I think when we're talking specifically around international football, the whole aim is to have the best team, the best players, the best decision makers, the best leadership. But this is my whole point.
I've been in the environment. I know it doesn't happen, and they pick. Listen, if there was,
no, it doesn't
there
happen, was, but isn't it, okay, the so, whole reason for it.
Yeah, yeah. But if there's me and you, right, and we're both unbelievable players, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got an attitude that if I'm not playing, I'm going to be terrible for the rest of the team. Mm-hmm. But you're a player that if you're not playing, you're still going to be great around the team. Who's getting picked, me or you?
Me.
Exactly. That's my point. So your personality and your character plays a part within a squad environment that's going to be away on camp. And that's why some of the top players that are so used to playing, Ronaldo, for example, wants to play and can be seen as disruptive. No, he just wants to play.
Yeah.
He wants to win. He's a winner. He's grown up being a winner. That's what happens. So you get picked. It's easier to pick somebody that is going to settle for it than not.
So we got some BBB fan questions. The first one is from TI_Salix. How do you build team culture relationships in international break in such a short space of time?
Difficult. I mean, far as a coach here, I'm not, but I think you have to have year-long communication. You have to build up a trust and a relationship with each of the players, and every player that commends managers from that they've had in their careers, they always say the same thing. It's they really cared about me. They constantly checked in with me. You have a relationship. So it doesn't matter that you're only there for a week. You have to be in constant contact. And you also have to look at the player as a full person, not just as a player.
I think you have a responsibility as a coach when you take on that role in getting to know your players, you know, and your players are not just your players. They're your people that, you know, you have to show, you know, that care for, you have to show that interest in, you have to know what gets them ticked, you have to know where they come from, and all of these things you have to go deep into. It takes time, it takes effort, but that's what I believe as a coach you sign up to in terms of that, and that is what helps to create the best or the closest to the best cultures and environments.
Do you know what else helps?
What else helps?
A guitar
definitely doesn't help.
Next.
Go on. We have another question from @JenTyndall. Thoughts on the amount of people bringing signs asking for shirts, gloves, to matches. Can I start this one?
Get into it.
Because I saw the England game that happened earlier on last week, and I actually tagged Chloe Kelly in my post, and I said, do I need a sign in order to get your shirt?
Chloe Kelly, if you're listening, what's your shirt?
I did tag Chloe. She has not answered me as of yet, and I do not have a shirt. So I'm not doing an advert. I'm just saying that potentially it shows that extra bit of effort. And I think in terms of the women's game, again, it just shows actually that sort of intimacy in terms of our fan relationship. And yeah, I just wanted to say that. Chloe Kelly, I'm still waiting for the shirt.
I think it's difficult, isn't it? Like, there's so many people that wants everybody's shirt. There's one shirt. And sometimes the game is so memorable to that player that they actually don't want to give that shirt away. Mm. And not because, you know, they don't like the kid or they don't want to show any interest in the fans that are, you know, coming out to support. But it's more of a case of sometimes, or they might have already pre-given it away.
Yeah.
It might be for an auction or whatever. It might be a charity, a family member. So it is difficult because I remember them times where people used to go, oh, you know, give your shirt. And I'm like, it's already given away.
Yeah.
You know, it's not because I can't give it you.
Yeah, but, well, with New Zealand, we only had like 3 shirts and we had to keep them the whole year. Maybe it was 2 years.
I think
we switched shirts, yeah, didn't we, Farah?
We didn't even mention that in the pod. Like, I literally switched shirts with Bex back in, well, we won't say the year because it was show our age.
It was the Olympics, wasn't it?
No.
London 2012?
No, you got my Olympic shirt. Was it the Olympics? I thought it was when we played in the China Cup. Or not the China Cup. Was it when we was in Korea or something? Really early on.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I thought it was an old shirt, but maybe I'm wrong. Number 6.
I have to try to find that one.
Must be a size 8 shirt then.
Yeah.
She was a size 0. I was probably a 12 or 14.
Yeah, right.
Chunky.
Oh, mate. Okay. And then last question from at Conaid. If you could play for any national team now, which would you choose? Vibes, not ranking.
Vibes, not ranking? Yeah.
No, I'm not going
all about the vibes, man.
Who goes for?
I'm going Germany.
Why?
What do you mean? Well, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, tell me. Tell me.
Because I just think they're the most adaptable nation.
Okay.
And I'm adaptable. Mm-hmm. And I like learning and I feel like they're always evolving. I think they're very organised, in and out of possession. They can play different styles. They can play with the ball, without the ball. They have creative players. Mm-hmm. They're just machines. They're a nation that I've always looked up to and hated playing against. So if I hated playing against you and I hate you, that means I love you really. So I would have loved to have played a part of the German national team.
So we've got Germany, Bex.
Do you know what? I could see you in the German national
team.
All
right,
they like screaming at each other too. They love that. They love yelling at each other, giving each other a little bit of shit. Get me to here, do this. That was a crap pass. Yeah. Ooh. You go. I have to have a think about this one. I already know yours. I already know yours.
I know who you're going to think it is, but I'm...
I know who it is.
No, you don't.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, go on.
Have a guess. Okay.
No, Farah, you
go
just
first.
Say it.
Guess.
No, just say it.
Guess.
Shall I tell you who it is?
Yeah.
Brazil.
I know. I knew it.
You waited until she said it.
You're Jamaica, right?
Yeah. I knew it was going to be Brazil.
So they're both there. I knew you were going to say...
Yeah, but did you notice that Farah said it right after you?
It was always going to be Brazil, but I knew you was going to think
Jamaica. Why Brazil?
Because you can Cruyff turn in the box. Everyone just play football. And I knew you was going to say Jamaica because I know the vibes. I know that, you know, I'm looking forward to the World Cup. But no, definitely in terms of...
If you saw her play in goal, she thought
literally.
She was an idiot.
It was just like being back on the show.
Exactly.
I know,
it's
right? And I can't say Jamaica because my family's from Caribbean, St. Lucian, and CONCACAF.
Too much.
Yes, too much. So, yeah, big up St. Lucia, 7-5.
Bex is going to say America.
Go on, Bex. No, she ditched America.
Yeah,
right?
Ditched America. Yeah. As if I could have played there anyway, but like, to be really honest. Do you know what? I think like one of the South
Sweden.
American...
Oh.
Yeah. No, I love the Swedes, but I played there. So I've already done that. Mm-hmm. And I played with the Germans.
Boring.
And I've already done that.
Boring.
And I love them. And Australians, nobody likes Australians. So
I didn't say that.
No, I think I would have gone for like an African or South American team because they always had the most fun. Mm. Like the quality of player, I think that the CAF produces, that Africa produces, is probably I think some of the best quality players. However, the lack of funding is so frustrating. So I probably would want to go play for an African team like a Nigeria or Ghana.
Trust me, when I
just
played Nigeria,
warm-up.
Yeah, right? Honestly,
yeah, just to hang out or the vibes, like
same,
all the
right?
jerseys. Like,
I was saying, when I used
team.
To play African nations. Especially Nigeria, right? say, for example, the ball is there 70-30, even 80-20 in my favour.
They still get it.
I'm not winning it.
They still get it.
I hated it. How?
Wow.
How?
I had a Nigerian player, Perpetua Nkotchua, on my team. You remember her? Pepe, they called her. Nigerian
captain.
It's
number 10. She went,
She was the best player I've ever played with in my whole life. Wow. And just the lack of funding and like the stories that she would tell me about their national team, it was so frustrating. But I would definitely go with
Asisa Ashwala,
there you go.
Super C, I loved her. Yeah. I love playing with her.
All right, yeah, well, that wraps up our Boots, Balls and Bras. Eartha Pond, thank you very much for hosting. And
thank you for having me.
Asking all the questions.
You here today.
great to be here at the Coventry Arena.
Yeah, with the Arnold Clark Cup. Thank you very much to the Arnold Clark Cup for hosting us today as well. And that's it for our Boots, Balls and Bras international segment. We will see you next week. Thanks for asking.
Don't forget to send in more questions. We love answering them.
Thanks for asking. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.